I think last week we started talking about the weather, right?
Did we?
That's what old men do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We talked about
the weather. I'm 50 now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Happy birthday.
We're going to do a segment on traffic and weather toward the end of the show.
Traffic, terrible. Weather, hot. Okay, what's next?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. You said, I think it's hotter for you than it is for me, but it is really hot.
I've never in my life got in my car and saw on the dashboard 103 degrees. And they said it was hotter in New York. Friends down there said it was much hotter. I can't believe it. I don't ever recall a time in my life where I ever saw the thermometer over like 100. I'm not even past like 95. I don't remember, but I don't remember last week. But I don't know if that's some kind of record up here.
Huh.
I don't ever remember being in the hundreds up here. Yeah, it's hot.
Yeah.
It's like Africa hot.
Have you ever been to Africa?
No, that's from a Neil Simon play. Biloxi Blues.
It is crazy. It's so funny because like this whole spring and early summer here has been rainy and like really nice. You know, it's mostly been in the 70s. We like kind of creeped into the 80s a little bit, but it's just been rainy and chill. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, I forgot, we're summer. That's right. Mm-hmm. It's going to be dry as a bone and 1,000 degrees outside. So that's what it is right now.
I keep thinking of reasons to get in my car and go places because while I'm driving in my car, it gets so cold that I can't even take it. I have to like crack the window. And then when I get to, like yesterday I went to Home Depot, you know, you sit in your car for 10 minutes scrolling just as an excuse to check every email 5 more times. Because you know when you open that door, it's on.
Mm. Yeah. Well, David, did you do anything for your birthday?
I basically just stayed home, ordered food. We rented the movie Friendship, which I freaking loved. I don't know. Are you familiar with it?
No.
It's got the Tim dude from I Think You Should Leave. Tim Robbins? Is that his name?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The comedian. He's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's like a newer movie, right? That's yeah. It's like a semi-serious.
Yeah. I think it might still be out in theaters, but you can rent it for like a ridiculous price. And since it was my birthday, we rented it for the ridiculous price. For $3 more, I could have owned it, but
yeah.
Oh, well. I loved it. And so we just kind of just hung out and did nothing. That's cool. That's the kind of birthday that I want.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember having a birthday like that. Those are great.
Yeah.
Those are nice. That's
the year,
cool.
The year I turned 50, you just reminded me when we're thinking, me and Jocko were driving back. Jocko's birthday and my birthday are just a couple days apart. But we were driving back from Atlanta, a wood show, one of the woodworking shows in Atlanta. And it was the day of my birthday when we arrived back at the house. And when Taylor at the time asked me what I wanted for my birthday, I said I wanted a Yorkie for my birthday. And me and Jocko loves little dogs. We were both so excited to pull into the house and like maybe see like a new baby Yorkie. And when we pulled in, like there was nothing. We were both like,
Aww.
But I did get Chippy that summer, a few months later. So Chippy showed up later that summer. But yeah, I just remember how me and Jocko were in the car so excited. But there might be a Yorkie by the time, because we had been driving all day.
A puppy. That's funny.
But I didn't do a party for my 50th. It was just like another day. That was it. That was the excitement of the day. I got to spend it with Jocko.
Yeah, Kelly asked if I wanted to do something special, go out, have people over, whatever. And I was like, nope, I just want to relax. It's been a busy few months, and I just want to relax.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. I think I'm sure everybody's different, but I think that's a pretty common thing, at least with guys I know. You know, as we get older, it's just like I don't really want to do a thing. Can I not do stuff? That sounds like a good
can I record. Not do stuff? Yes.
Yeah.
Bob, you got a couple of years ahead, right?
Yeah, I'll be 48 here in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but I mean, like, I don't know, 50. Like, I remember turning 40 and everybody was acting like it was going to be a big change or whatever. It's nothing. I don't think 50 is going to be a thing either, you know? So I'm not going to make a big deal out of it.
No, it's not a big deal.
But I'm not there yet either, so we'll see. Maybe in 2 years I'll decide I want to make a big deal out of it.
The funny thing is, every year for my birthday, I take down my personal Facebook page, or I make it so you can't post. And I didn't do it this year. Kelly, like first thing in the morning, she wrote on my personal Facebook page, "Happy birthday," because she wanted to do it before I disallowed post on my page, but I left it up, and I've got a good surrounding of friends and family. Yeah.
Yeah, I just hit my birthday, so I wouldn't get all those influx of, you know, things, people I knew for like a week in college or whatever. But cool. Well, what have you guys been up to in the heat? Anything?
I just showed you guys a picture. I took a big job, a big rush job, which, and then all of a sudden it's 100 degrees every day. I'm slinging around these 16-foot boards of white oak that I had in the bushes. It was the remnants of the fence job we did in the yard. And I'm turning them into boxes for the liquor team that I work for. I don't know. I think they're going to be seats in a restaurant. I'm not sure. They sent me a sample picture and said, can you make 50 of these by next week? And I said, challenge accepted. Mm. But the good thing is I was about to go and buy all the wood, which would have been a couple thousand dollars probably. And I drove past this giant pile that was rotting in the bushes. So I was like, ooh. So I did one sample in good, clean, white sawmill wood. And then I did one in that. And I was like, you guys okay with this wood? It's kind of punky in some spots and moldy and dirty. And they're like, we love it. It's like, okay. So I got rid of a giant pile of wood and I'm making some money. So I'm working on that. But it's like the hottest it's been. And these are the heaviest things I've been playing with.
So since. I have a question. Maybe you guys would know this. If that wood has been laying out, you know, like you said, it's moldy. It's got like, it's just wet. It has stuff growing on it probably.
Between every plank, there's a colony of ants. And there's probably about 100 planks.
So what's a good way to treat something like that to keep the look but kill off all of the living
stuff? Honestly, just letting it dry, because I prepped about half of what I needed to and yesterday night, and even before we started, I prepped more. You pick it up, it's gooey, it's got black mold on it, it's gross, there's ant colony columns, literally, like you could see, like, you know, when it was beside another piece of wood, they had a whole network inside of it. I just let it dry off, and then just handling it, all the muck starts to fall off as you're handling it, and of course as it dries. So the 25 pieces I have done already today, the fireman's going to come and help me, will give it a light sanding and like a hard brush with a firm brush to get off the dirt and stuff. But as they're drying, they're starting to look pretty good. But when they're like almost black when you, because it's white oak, so white oak does kind of tend to turn black when it gets little infections in it. And but as it's drying off, it's starting to come back to these like rich earth tones. And just maybe even just a wire brush and then a light sanding just to break the corners down. But it's, like I said, they're probably going to end up in Kentucky somewhere, these things, you know, so everybody loves that barnwood look. So
they, yeah, when I sent them the sample. Without the stuff that can get on you.
Without the bugs. Yeah.
But it's funny, every other piece has like a million ants on it. I just throw it onto the cement and let them find a new home. But just a hard brush will probably do it. And so I've been working on that. And also the boot, the cowboy boot car. I got the main boot basically done. I didn't paint it yet, but then I got to make the upper. So I'm going to focus on that. Once I'm finished with these bar stools, I'm going to work on the upper. And that should be fun. And then July 12th is the go-kart day. So I definitely will be ready by then. And then it's back to the Woody wagon, the Cadillac. Full steam ahead until August, till the end of August. Yeah, a lot to do. But it's going to cool off here by the end of the week, so it'll be all right. But when it's that hot, I just put on an old pair of shorts, cut off jeans, and know that any T-shirt I put on is going to get destroyed. And that's that. Just work on through. Keep a lot of fans around. Drink a lot of water. Once the winter breaks, I always keep a cooler in my car full of sodas, mostly just soda waters and water. And everybody that comes within vicinity of my truck, they're like, hey, is the cooler full? Like, so everybody knows to go in the cooler for like and almost every morning, like right after we're done, I'll go and get new ice. So right down the block. So everybody around me knows they can hit the cooler up for something nice and frosty. So that helps too. That really helps. It's always right near me. So
that's cool. We had, with the pool being built in our backyard, we've had a cooler on our back porch for the guys that have been working for the past 6 months, and it's just a thing now. You know, every week or so we go fill it up with Gatorade and water and more ice. And, but that's all kind of done now. pool is swimmable. We've been in it a lot. We've been the last couple of days. We've been digging a trench, so the heater, which we don't need obviously right now, but we'll need eventually. The heater is on the back end of it, the farthest end from the house. But the gas meter is on the front of the house. So we're eventually going to move the gas meter around to the side, but we've had to dig a trench this week from the front corner of the house all the way to the back of the pool. So it's like 100 feet or so. It's a 2-foot trench, and I rented a trencher, and this guy I know offered to, like, he's done it a bunch, so he offered to come over and just, like, do it one day. And I paid him. And so he dug most of the trench, but then it ran out of gas, so he left. So I had to get gas, and then I finished the trench for a few hours. And then we had to go back and, like, hand-dig sections where the roots were too much for the trencher, so we had to, like, chop out the roots, which was terrible. And then dig it down so that it was, you know, deep enough all the way across. Anyway, so that was tough. That was a lot of work. My shoulders are still feeling it. But then, yesterday, the gas company and the plumbing company that we're working with came and laid a PVC sleeve. So this is not a straight trench. I say trench, you're probably thinking, like, that's a straight line from point A to point B. It's like the entire alphabet, like A to B, and then a B to C, and then a C, you know, all the way, like, around the house, around the concrete, around the plant, around the concrete again. And these guys laid a 4-inch PVC sleeve with all sorts of bends and angles and stuff in this heat. They were out there for probably 5 hours laying the sleeve down in this thing, and they got it done, and they didn't complain. They were awesome. So now the sleeve is down there, and we can start backfilling it, covering it up, and then eventually, when we get closer to actually hooking up the gas stuff, then they'll, like, fish the gas line through this. It's like a flexible line. Somehow they're going to fish it through this curvy line for 100 feet. I don't know how they're going to do that, but they didn't seem worried about it. So today we got to go out and start, like, we're going to lay down some drainage stuff in this trench and then backfill it with all the dirt that we dug out. And so I have a long, hot day ahead of me as well.
Hmm.
So not crazy about that.
There's just a lot of gravel in the bottom of that ditch?
No, there's no gravel in it yet. Oh, we're probably going to put some gravel on top of the... I mean, our ground is just really rocky, so there's just tons of rocks. There were a couple of big bushes that we, like a huge holly bush that we cut out, and those roots are everywhere, you know, for 20 feet. And so we have these random big roots that we've had to dig through to get through it. But so we're going to lay down, like, a drainage pipe on top of the PVC that they put in for the sleeve. And then we're going to put some gravel and then backfill dirt on top of that to help with the drainage, because this is on a hill, and so the hill comes down from one side of our yard to the pool, and then on the other side of the pool, the hill goes down to our neighbor's house. So this one that we're working on is just dirt, and with this crazy rain we've had lately, it just washes dirt over the concrete on the pool. So we've had mud on the pool cover like 3 times, and it's a terrible mess. So we're trying to get it all, you know, like, just get the dirt back down, put sod on it, and contain the mud. That's kind of been our goal. So we gotta do that this week, and then we're leaving beginning of next week for vacation. So no show next week. I didn't tell you guys.
Okay.
No.
Again?
Wednesday. No, you're going to have your free Wednesday.
No one's going to know.
Except for everybody listening. No, anyway, but that's what I've been doing. A lot of outdoor labor, which is not something I'm terribly used to these days. But it's a little bit gratifying, you know? Like, it feels good to, like, put in a hard day's work and to be completely drenched and look at the, like, I moved that dirt from there to there, you know?
I did
It does feel kind of good, but...
Yeah.
David, what about you? You been moving dirt?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I've been making a coffee table for the rental. Still slowly working on pieces for that. But this particular coffee table, I made it into 3 pieces, so it's kind of modular. So
I love the idea. The user sent a picture. The grain runs through the top. I love it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so the, like, the middle piece is round, so it kind of looks like it could be used as a stool. And then the two end pieces. you know, if you're sitting on the couch and you wanted to pull them closer to you for your food or your beverages or whatever, and then they all kind of fit back together, like the middle piece is round and the other two pieces kind of wrap around it. And I saw, and I think I'm going to talk about it in the video, but I saw when I was doing research for coffee tables, there's one on Amazon and it's two L-shaped pieces, and they can either fit together like a square or they can fit together like a long rectangle. And I thought that's interesting, but I don't know when you would ever want to change the shape of your coffee table. And so that gave me this idea of like this three-piece coffee table that could be used as stool, a bench, or like a little TV tray type thing, and you can pull it apart and put it back together.
Yeah, that's cool looking.
All out of 1.5-inch walnut, so it's heavy and beefy.
Yeah. I'm jealous of that. Like, I would never be able to find walnut like that here.
Hmm. Yeah. When I was in the city, I was buying wood like that on Amazon. Not Amazon, eBay. I would order a plank like that from eBay, and it would show up. You don't want to order something more than like 6 feet, but you could order a nice chunk of wood online. It shows up wrapped in cardboard, and the corners are all destroyed, but that doesn't matter.
That sounds great. So
for this, I drew it up, and I'm like, oh, this is great. I'm going to use this real big, heavy, beefy wood. And then I went to KenCraft, and then it's called six quarter. The shelf was empty, and I was like, oh, no. This is what I'm supposed to do tomorrow. What am I? And then I was asking Tracy, one of the owners, I was like, hey, any chance you have 1.5-inch walnut hidden in the back? And he's like, I got a fresh pallet. So we got to go to the back, and I got a pick of a whole pallet of wood to choose the best pieces. And it was nice.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Is that pattern routed, or did you do it on a CNC?
So that's a router pattern.
Oh, cool.
So I just, in the video, like one of, so there's actually three different patterns. There's the middle piece, same pattern for the two ends. And then there's a pattern for the legs, which are, I forget what that lap or that joint is called, but it's like a X where you cut away half of one, half of the other, and they slide into each other. And that's a pattern. So I cut one on the scroll saw, and then I cut the other two on the laser to show that, you know, if you don't have a scroll saw, you can use your laser. And then just a lot of routing.
Well, it looks nice. Looks real nice.
Thank you. Yeah, but it's not... I'm finishing up today. Those tops aren't attached. So as soon as we're done here, my brother's coming over to finish filming that video.
How would you attach them? Are you going to peg them, or do you just surface glue them?
I haven't completely... I'm not going to surface glue because... it's all solid wood. Like if it was plywood, sure, I probably could get away with it.
But if you have some movement you got to deal with.
Yeah. I'm probably, and so the attachments are going to be more towards the center. So like if you put them way on the outside, it expand too much. I'm probably going to use dowels and like a little center finder. I could use a domino. I also have this jig called a Dowelmax. I'll figure it out when we get out to the shop.
Yeah. That's cool.
Awesome. Mm-mm. Well, what were we going to talk about? It was hot.
Did you write it down?
Adapting.
We're so hot, we don't even know what to talk about right now.
It's cool in my basement. Same temperature in this room all year long. But we were going to talk about like not just being hot, but like adapting. Because I think we all live in... different enough, it's similar temperatures, but not necessarily the same temperature all the time. You guys definitely have to deal with more snow and stuff than I do.
Yeah.
But I don't really have to adapt a whole lot throughout the year because my shop is in the basement. But working on the car, going out to the farm, like I definitely have found that I've missed windows of weather that are ideal for being out there. You know, like I was out there a little bit this spring, but I really should have taken advantage of the spring because now it's just unbearable to be in that barn with no airflow, just crazy, you know, heat. But I really should have taken advantage of the spring and then again in the fall because the winter is almost impossible to be out there too, especially for like body filler and paint. I can't do those things out in that. And even welding is tough because if you're trying to do sheet metal and you got really cold metal, you have to like preheat everything and try to keep it at a reasonable temperature. So
the other thing too is like doing a welding video in this heat. I don't mind the welding. It's having to put on the gear.
Yeah.
So whenever I do a YouTube video, don't tell anybody this, but I'll put on my gear for just a couple of clicks of the trigger, and then take it off, and then weld off camera with nothing on. I do it naked.
Naked welding.
Yeah. Mm. It's
nothing on.
No, I. It's impossible. You can't wear that jacket. That jacket makes me overheat when it's cold out. When it's hot out, forget it. I'll put it on just for a couple years ago. Our contact at Lincoln, Derek says, she saw the video of you wearing Crocs and shorts. You really got to start. You really got to start gearing up. Otherwise, they're going to come down on you. So now, I remember that.
Do you know, I mean, this is doubtful, but so you're not supposed to weld in synthetics, right? You don't want to wear anything that's like polyester or anything mm-hmm. like that. So you can't use a cooling shirt, like a fishing shirt or something that would be kind of cool, but long sleeve, it would protect you from the UV. But if you had a spark come on that, it's going to melt through it. It's going to burn you. It's going to melt the shirt to you. But I wonder if there are any like natural kind of cotton or wool based things that are made to kind of keep you cool while you weld.
I got to ask. I forget what it's called. FR, fire retardant? I forget the name of the line, but Carhartt makes a whole line of clothes that's fire retardant. It's a little bit more expensive, and it's got its own kind of style. And they sent me some of them, and they're for welding and working in environments where guys are welding and torching and blacksmithing, and that's all fire retardant clothes. It's fire preventative. So I wonder if you could probably wear like long sleeves. If I could probably get away with wearing one of those long sleeves, but you know, for me, welding in general on camera, I would make sure I'm wearing a Lincoln jacket. But in general, you could certainly probably weld. I have one that's fairly beat up. I wore it most of the winter. And the end of the sleeves are tattered a little bit, but there aren't any burn holes in it. Whereas some of my regular cotton shirts that I welded in with long sleeves have hundreds of holes burned through, like around the waist area from grinding too. So it definitely works. I can't attest to how cool it would be on a day like today. I wouldn't even try it. But I do remember I had on a pair of, you know, some people would call them trainers or running shoes or whatever, and I was welding in the city, and a glob of hot metal came right down through the top, burned right through the top of this thing, and landed between my toes, and I was jumping around.
That has happened to me a few times. Because I used the wrong shoes.
It went right through the top of the sneakers and landed right between my first and second toe. Yeah. And I was like, I felt like I was getting electrocuted. I was kicking my shoe off trying to get to that, to push some comfort into that.
Yeah.
But with a day like today and these last couple of days, I make sure that I have as many fans as I can in different areas. And it's nice. It's like I go from one fan to the other. And in between, I try and do work. So I try and do a little bit of work. And then I know there's a fan on the other side of the room. I go stand in front of that. So that's nice. I work, get completely disgusting, and then go take a break in front of the fan. So it really helps. Sometimes you walk in front of the fan, it's just pushing hot air. But the breeze is still helpful, no doubt. And, you know, then it's always a good excuse to just hop in the car and take a ride with the AC cranked up. I was in Home Depot yesterday. I didn't want to leave. It was nice and cold in there. I could imagine what their heating bill is, cooling bill.
Yeah, yeah.
But I went into a Mavis Tire yesterday because I'm getting new tires for the tow truck, and it was like 50 degrees in there. It's a much smaller office, but it was like walking into a freezer. I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah, the person working in there, they're not the one that pays the bill. You're like, whatever, man.
But no, that's a good break from the heat. I also went into Tractor Supply. If you live in a tropical city like Hong Kong, because I have experience there, if you have a city like that, and also in Northeast, I know we have some cities that are like this, but for the opposite reason, maybe for the winter, most of the public works buildings are connected. So you can get in an office building or a hotel in Hong Kong and walk for like almost a mile and never leave a building, because they're all connected. Because you will go from air conditioning to air conditioning to air conditioning to air conditioning to air conditioning. Because to walk outside, obviously you can, and there are people walking outside, but it's disgusting.
I've heard Minnesota's like that as well. There's you can go from building to building, and
as I say, they know that some cities in America, and that's also because of the winter. You know, like Minnesota must have harsh winters, and you don't want to come in and out, and it's just like a public works agreement that if you're going to build a building in this block, you're going to have a pass through.
Are you familiar with the channel I Did a Thing?
Mm-hmm. A
crazy Australian guy does. I mean, he's always welding barefoot, hardly any clothes except for like a little leather bib. But yeah, welding sparks are landing on his feet, and it's hilarious. I've always wondered if it's fake. Like, is he actually doing this? Because he's always barefoot. Or is it just
maybe he's one of those people that like can't feel pain.
It's not bad when they bounce off. I've been there. It's not bad, but it's just bad when they land in your shoe and they're like looking to cool off against your skin. That's the hard part.
Well, my feet are hairy enough where it wouldn't bounce off. It's just
going to
stick in the hairs.
Oh, God.
I'll post a photo on Instagram.
Nah, that's all right. That's all right. So, I mean, you know, the fans, I guess, are good for the hot weather, but Jimmy, you end up having to work through the winter in like exposed spaces. I guess it's not as exposed as it used to be because your barn is. Oh, you're muted.
Yeah, I have really good heat in the shop, but I'm not. It's different now. This winter, I changed it up. I have auto delivery, but I did not have auto delivery on the propane, and so at one point last year, before I had auto delivery, propane ran out, and then I had to call my gas company and schedule a delivery, which it was in the dead of winter, so everybody was asking, so it took them a few days to get there. So I was working in the shop, and if it was 20 degrees out, it was 20 degrees in the shop, and that was rough. And that was when I went out and I bought a Sunfire heater. Everybody was getting them for free. I didn't make any contact with them, and I went out and I bought a $3,000 Sunfire heater just to make it through those couple of weeks. I figured I'd use it again. I still have it. Obviously, it's a good piece of equipment. And then I made friends with them, and then they sent me a different model. So now I have two Sunfire heaters, one I bought, one that I got. But that helped me get through, having that Sunfire heater. It didn't heat the whole place. Once the propane kicked back in and the floor was warmed up, it's like more comfortable than the house. And we're in the process right now, me and the guys that are working for me, we got the horse barn is all geared up. I got propane, I got a heater, I got the floor slab has heating in it. I got two antique radiators up in the leather shop. They're piped in. Everything's all piped in. And the only thing I don't have, I got plumbing, water, everything is out there. I don't have a sewer system, so that's going to be the next thing. We've prepared the ground for the sewer system. That's going to get put in. It's a leach field. I'm going to put the leach field in. So it's started the horse barn in 2020. 5 years later. But come the winter, probably October, November, by then, the house will be its own standalone house with water, hot water, shower, toilet, everything. So that's going to be interesting. Then then I have to be on it with the, because then it's like a living, breathing object that you can't let go into a deep freeze. I got to make sure the propane's always. But now with this regional company called Nolan, Nolan is on auto delivery. They deliver now to this house and the workshop. And they're always making sure that the tanks are full. So I wouldn't have to worry about it. But it's just another thing to worry about. It's just another. Up here, when things go into super deep freeze, same thing with where David is, you got to make sure that that living, breathing object, which is a home, doesn't get neglected, going through a deep freeze, and then you end up with pipes broken in various parts of the house, broken toilets. It's unbelievable to me that everybody in the cold weather, their entire living, breathing object of a house is always subject to being locked up in the cold if you're not careful.
Well, luckily, like our house, it's living and breathing with so many people and so many things all the time that like it's never locked up. Now, the farm for us is kind of, it gets neglected you know, there's not a whole lot going out on out there. I mean, the water's just coming out of the ground into a couple of like pipes, and you know, there's no hot water, there's no heating, there's no AC out there to have to keep up with. But every, you know, spring when I go out there, it's, I do have to kind of like break off all the cobwebs. And
the racetrack's the same thing. I got to make sure the system's drained because I don't heat the place. So I got to make sure the system's drained, you know, sometime November when the weather starts to kick, and then we got to turn it back on. But it's having a house, if you're like a single person or, for instance, you're elderly, it's work. You really got to make sure people are on it. And that's why the Northeast plumbers must make all their money in the winter, just going from one emergency to another, especially when we have like a deep freeze and you have those cold fronts that come through.
Yeah.
Well, like a little, like in my mother's house, my mother called me panicking. She said, this water's rushing out of the thing. There was a squirrel had made a hole, which caused a draft, which blew right on this pipe, which was like 10 feet away. And the draft came down this little column between two rafters and blew right on this pipe. And when you went to where the pipe was frozen, I cut it out and replaced it a few years ago. Right where you look at the pipe, you can look straight down and see the hole that the squirrel made. And it's like an exact consequence of a squirrel popping a hole through the wall.
Hmm.
So we fixed it all. But things like that, you just never know where and when it's going to happen. That breeze that's been going on. I used to get frozen pipes under the house all the time, right under the kitchen. Since I put the porch up and these flower beds, the breeze doesn't cut through that part of the house anymore. So I don't get frozen pipes there anymore because the breeze has been cut off by a 10-foot deep flower bed in front of it. So things to consider if you have an open foundation or if you have a rocky foundation with a breezy hole, you know, breezy points in it. Just cut the wind.
So one thing I was thinking about in regard to all this, like, you know, just adapting is these guys that did our pool, this company has been fantastic. And every person that has worked on it, save one guy, was, and he was actually only there for a day. I think he quit right after. But everybody but that one guy were fantastic. And we started this in January. So they came out and had to break up the driveway in January, and it was cold. It was in the 20s or 30s or something when they were doing this work. And then after that, they were like, well, now we have to clear all this stuff out. And then the temperature dropped down into the single digits. And they, one day, I remember looking out there, and it was 3 degrees, and there were 6 or 8 guys out there breaking up concrete with sledgehammers and, like, picking it up with this machine and throwing it in the back of a truck just all day long, probably a couple of days. And so the same group of guys, they did that work. Then they had to wait a little while, wait a few weeks before they could do the next bit of work. And the weather was different then, obviously. All the way up until this past week, they've been out there still doing things. One of those guys is the guy that I hired to dig the trench. And so he was out there in 98-degree weather digging this trench the other day. So the same group of guys has worked in this, you know, almost 100-degree span over the course of 6 months, doing all sorts of different types of work outside. And just watching them, I don't have a whole lot of experience like on construction sites. I've only done like small construction, you know, with like Habitat for Humanity, or I'm on mission trips where it's like a couple of days with other amateurs trying to do something that is helpful for people. But not a professional construction site where these guys just work hard all the time, do all sorts of different stuff. And so being able to see them work in all these different conditions and do all different types of work, the same, you know, few people, it's pretty amazing and made me feel pretty lame. You know what I mean? Not like boohoo me, but I get to work in a temperature controlled shop most of the time, sit in my nice gaming chair here at my desk and talk to my friends, and this is my job. And these guys are out here busting their butts in all this crazy weather doing work and not complaining about it, not being sour about the fact that they're hot and sweaty. Like, they were have always been super talkative and respectful and stuff to us. And I don't know, it made me kind of like, I should probably toughen up a little bit. maybe put myself in a situation where I'm, you know, having to physically work a little bit harder. And not to keep up or anything, but just, like, I probably need that push. So we had, when we laid the sod a few weeks ago for half the yard, It was actually really nice weather the day that the sod was going to be delivered, but it was going to be pouring down rain, so I wanted to get it down in time. So I called all three of my boys outside. I would have made my daughter, but she wasn't home. But I got the boys all out there, and I was like, all right, this is how you lay sod. You lay it down like this, and then you put the next one next to it, and then you do a tile pattern, or like a brick pattern. Go! And we all just laid sod. And we got about halfway done, and the storm came. And it was absolutely dumping on us. Just a huge amount of rain. And
But it's good. That's what you want for sod.
Perfect. It was perfect for sod. But it was funny because the whole reason we were trying to get it down in time is because it was all dirt, had been graded, and it was just every day it would rain and it was washing away. And it was washing downhill, down our driveway, onto my neighbor's little drainage thing. It's filling up his drainage thing with our dirt. And so this rain is just dumping and pouring while we're trying to lay the sod from the top of the hill down. The rain's coming. I'm just like watching the mud flow down the driveway. I'm like, this is what we're trying to avoid. And so the boys are out there helping me, and we're slamming this stuff down. And I laid those last pieces at the very top of the driveway. And it was crazy because the water that was running down the driveway went from mud color to water color just by like the last pieces.
The last one.
Yeah. And, you know, it was probably, I don't know, 3 hours of, you know, I did most of it. The boys were kind of helpful, not terribly helpful, but, you know, they were helpful. And it was probably 3 or 4 hours of laying this stuff just completely muddy, completely drenched at the end of it. It felt so good to get a good, hard day's work like that. And it was really gratifying to, like, look, we have grass all of a sudden. And look, the mud's not flowing anymore. Like, just like that. But so doing that, like, was a nice reminder of how doing that kind of work, even in conditions that are not ideal, can be pretty gratifying, can feel pretty good. Now, I've got this shed build coming up. I think I talked to you all about it a little bit. I'm going to build my first structure. I've never built like a structure from the ground up before, built decks and stuff. But so we're going to build this. It was going to be a pottery shed for Jenny, and it still might be, but we're having to kind of generalize it a little bit. So it's going to be a pool house, storage shed, pottery shed, whatever it ends up becoming, but I'm making it for all of those purposes. And so now I'm at a point where I'm designing this thing and trying to figure out all the construction of it and all the steps for roofing and all these different things I've never done before. But I'm also looking at the weather, and I'm thinking, like, right now and for the next 2 months would be a pretty terrible time to start building this thing in the sun on concrete, you know. But at the same time, if I wait, then I'm going to lose my window, and then it's going to be winter time. And then I'm going to be dealing with just a different set of...
Get yourself a couple of pop-up tents. You see, I sent you guys a picture of the shoe in process. That pop-up tent is a savior. Oh,
yeah.
So just standing in that shade under a pop-up tent, even if you have your tools organized underneath it. If you don't have any other shelter, it really is helpful.
Yeah. So maybe I think I probably will start that sooner than later, but go ahead.
I might have a distorted memory, but it seems like when we were kids... that we used to play in the heat all day. And we used to play in the freezing snow all day. Like, I remember just being told, like, leave the house, don't come back but be home before dark. And we would just, we live in a small town, and we just did whatever we did in the hot sun or in the cold snow. Did my tolerance go away, or do I just have a bad memory of being a kid?
I think cold, back then cold was probably like 30 degrees. No, 10. And hot was like 87, not 105.
Our tolerance. I think I'm sure it's our tolerance. Because I think the older we get, the more, and this goes for all sorts of stuff, the older we get, the more used to, what's comfort. The word? It's comfort, but it's also like we're spoiled. The older you get, the more you can afford to spoil yourself with, you know, less hot clothes and more air conditioning and cars that have AC and, you know, you can easily come up with reasons to not be out in the heat. And so you kind of spoil yourself into like, well, I don't have to, I'm an adult. I don't have to be outside. I don't have to play in the snow. I don't have to, you know?
Yeah.
And then it just gets to where you're just kind of used to not doing it.
It's because, you know, like a lot of people my age, they probably didn't, we didn't have air conditioning in our home when I was a kid. Like, we lived in a house that was built in 1905, right? And there was, so there was no central air. We had crappy cars. There was no air conditioning in cars. We just, you rolled the windows down and that was, that was life.
I still feel the guilt of turning on the AC, because my dad yelled at my mother when we were kids, because AC will eat up the gas. And so when we were alone with my mother would like only give us a little bit of AC because it eats up the gas. And now when I turn on the AC, I'm like, I don't care at all. Let's burn it. I don't care if I have to fill my car up three times in one day. I don't care at all. My comfort is what I'm worried about right this minute. But it's funny how, like, I go to hit, like, crank the AC all the way. Like, you could dial it to 10 or you could dial it to 5. I dial it to 11. I mean, I don't care. But, I still feel a little bit of guilt because I've been, it's like going to church. Like, you get that guilt of going to church. Same thing of, like, using your AC with your parents in their car.
Well, I mean, with like church, I think you should hopefully grow out of the fact that you're doing it because you feel guilty.
I am.
And do it for yourself, you know? Like, the AC is for you.
At
like,
58, it's almost gone.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm listening to a book, which is, I'm not going to recommend because it's not a great book, but there are a couple things in it that are talking about that kind of a thing, where it's like you grew up spending money a certain way, and you end up... the point is basically if you didn't learn about financial stuff correctly as a kid, if you learned through guilt or through the idea of scarcity, you carry that with you, and then you treat money like it's scarce. Mm-hmm. And you treat like spending on yourself is a bad thing, and it's those like habits, same kind of thing as the AC.
Yep.
But it's been funny to think back about, like, well, how did I learn about money, and did I learn about money? There's a lot of things I never learned about, financial stuff. So I'm trying to educate myself on that now. But a lot of it was just like, we always did this, so that's just the way it's supposed to be. You know, we always spent money on this or didn't spend money on this. And so now I'm having to look back and at, like, why was that? Or did I just not know about it?
Interesting thing. I mean, this is a total topic change, but like Kelly and I will discuss of like, we, there's a, sometimes we feel guilty for having nice cars or a nice place to live, I didn't have these things when I was younger. Like, the family basically would say, people with money were buttholes, and that's just the way it is. And now I have nice things. I guess kid self would consider me a butthole, yeah.
Well, there's guilt with that. Yeah, there is guilt with that. And there's a lot of that through reading this book. A lot of that generational stuff is like, you were taught that people with money are not nice, or they got it some way that's not fair to you, or there's all these things that you get taught. Maybe it's well-intentioned, but not necessarily true. And so the thing now is, this book is called Rich Dad Poor Dad. It's not a great book.
Oh yeah,
but a lot around. Of people have read it, and a lot of people it's not great from, like, it's not well written. There's some good stuff in it, and I'm getting some things out of it, and I'm learning, and I agree and disagree with different parts of it and whatever. But it's exposing just, like, things I hadn't realized I thought or never really had a reason to think about. Yeah, like, how do you perceive people that you see as successful? Do you perceive them as somebody to aspire to, or are they the evil, like, rich person that just has a thing that you didn't have, and so now you're jealous about it, and why are you jealous about it? And it's exposing stuff like that, which is interesting to think about. But back to the whole thing, yes, the guilt with, do I spend money on myself? Do I spend money on air conditioning or on a nice car that has air conditioning, or on the, Festool tools instead of the Harbor Freight tools? Those types of things are often, you're just carrying that guilt over from whatever you learned when you were a kid, or where you started YouTube. What was the persona of a YouTube woodworker person, and what tools did they use 10 years ago, 15 years ago? are you carrying that over into what you do now? And so, yeah.
I talked about this early on when my dad passed away. We're going through, his house is almost empty now, but it took us almost closing in on more than a year and a half of emptying his house out. And going through everything he bought, he always got the cheap version of everything. There isn't one, honestly say, we gave away as much as we could. We didn't try and sell anything. Gave away as much as we could. Some stuff like videotapes just went right in the dumpster. But over and over again, aside from the sentimental things that we've had since we were kids and the things that we've all taken, tools and hand tools and things that we all remember that my dad had since we were kids that might have belonged to his father, he did not treat himself. And as I get older, I realize to myself, I got the money. I want the machine. Buy the machine. It's going to improve my working life. This is what I do. My life is here. I'm here to work and make stuff. Why always go for the lesser expensive thing? And that's a consequence of his father always going for the sure job or the steady this or the steady that, or, you know, why buy when we can go to the junkyard and get it, or go to the recycling bin and get one that's just like it. I probably told you guys this years ago. My brother John was riffing on stage, and happened to be all the family members were there, and he was imitating my dad. And John said, for once during Christmas, I wanted a box or a toy that didn't have double scotch tape on it. Because my dad would always go to the discount part of any store and buy like the return. Mm-hmm. Always. I remember opening up, like, I remember Christmas morning, I opened up a box of Lionel Trains, and the tape was already broken. Because somebody had bought it and returned it, and my dad got it for cheap. But that's how he was. He just did not treat himself. And my brother John said, don't you, like, he's like, when I wanted a Schwinn with the stick shifter in the middle in 1974, my dad got me a Vista. Vista was like a competitive brand of Schwinn. They made like a similar looking bike. If Dave Gagne was here, he would be laughing. My brother John, he imitated my dad. He goes, it's just like the one you wanted. Like, that phrase encapsulates my whole childhood with my dad.
Just like it.
It's just like the one you wanted.
Are you familiar
I wanted.
Are you familiar with the meme, we have McDonald's at home?
I don't know it, but I've heard that.
Yeah, so, you know, the kids want McDonald's, and the parents are like, no, we have McDonald's at home. And then you see the burger made at home. It's just a horrible like piece of meat on two pieces of white bread where the juices are just running through. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, talk about, I don't know how we got on the subject, but, you know, it's important to treat yourself.
At the same time,
turn the
devil's advocate, though, is one thing that can happen, and I've seen this in myself, is this like overcompensation for the stuff that you didn't have as a kid, or the things that you like never. So like
15 trucks and
yeah, exactly, a bunch of the same truck, bunch of the same bandsaw. I mean, even simple things like, I've noticed this in myself. When I was growing up, we didn't drink sodas. Nobody had sodas. And so, and we never ate like sugar cereals. And so when I went off to college, it was like, it's Mountain Dew Fruit Loops time or Fruity Pebbles time or whatever, like all the time. And because I didn't have it whenever, that means I deserve it now. And so I did this, and you know, that was one silly example, but there was a lot of stuff like that that was, you know, that was maybe withheld from me as a kid for my own benefit. I mean, obviously, I don't need sodas and I don't need sugar cereals. My dad was a dentist. Like, I don't need my teeth to rot. It was for my best interest, but I still felt somehow slighted. And then as an adult was like, oh, yeah, well, now I have, you know, I deserve to have this swing in the other direction. And then just, like, wasted all my money on pizza and sodas and stuff in college and, like, just blew through. You know, it was just a weird overcompensation the other direction. I think you can easily do that as a even more mature adult who knows better.
That's the consequence I have is I spent my entire life with my father watching him buy the cheapest version of anything we could possibly get, or the used version, or the return, or the chipped, or the damaged, anything. I never knew anybody like my dad that has as many relationships with the store managers, because he would go meet the store managers at like Newmark and Lewis or PC Richards and say, what do you got that's got a broken corner that you don't want to return? And so then we'd end up with like a brand new TV where the corner's crushed because he got it for a discount. But in my life, I just walk right in and go to exactly what I want and pay exactly what it is. Even if I'm buying it from something, like, I never negotiate with anybody. Like, I go right in and I go, I want that one. But the difference is, I don't have kids. I don't have four kids, and I'm not managing a family of six. You know, and that is the difference. And I give my dad the credit for doing what he did, the way he did it, how he did it. You know, in a fireman's salary, which is always limited. Three jobs, doing whatever else he could on the side. But I do see where he would deprive himself of some of the things he would have benefited from having. Like, I remember when he bought his first brand new car when he was like in his 60s. It's like the first time he bought a brand new car, because his cousin talked him into it to go lease like a Honda Jeep or a Honda, like a Honda minivan, some kind of Honda. He's like, it's so nice. It's so nice. It's like, everything works. I'm like, yeah, that's why I always buy a brand new car. Like, I bought like four brand new cars in my life, maybe five, because I just want it to work.
It's he like probably felt like he didn't deserve it.
That's true. And I feel that same guilt, 100%. Mm. I mean, I do feel that sometimes. And, you know, I've worked that out in therapy. Like, you don't feel like you deserve it, 100%. Mm-hmm. 100%. I'm a little bit out of that now, and that's why I'm broke. Just buy whatever I want. I deserve it. I deserve to be broke.
It's funny you brought up the soda thing, Bob, because when I was living with my mom and stepfather, we didn't have soda as kids. And we always wanted soda. Anytime we would go out, like, oh, we are going to McDonald's. I can't wait to have a Coke. And then when I moved, since we never had soda at home, I moved in with my dad. I was like 13, I believe. I could have soda. And so then I just drank soda all the time up until I was like 30 something. I just had two Pepsis every single day. That's a lot of sugar. Now I've gone back to I have like two Pepsis in a year. I just don't drink soda. But it's funny, I think I just overdid it because I could have it all the time.
And it's funny because I've seen that same cycle with sodas with my own kids. So we did the same thing that my parents did. Like, you don't need soda, just get water. Like, it makes sense. You're on the soccer field all the time. You need to be drinking water. Just drink water. And so we withheld sodas from them for a long time, even like Sprite and stuff, which is not the worst of them. And then it got to a point I was like, they're going to do the same swing back that I do if we don't up a little bit, you know? And so that's one example of a few things where we've had to be like, okay, like, let's not overdo it. Let's just teach them a good habit and not withhold. Because there is a pretty big difference in teaching your kids that you should never have this thing, or you have to learn to manage this thing, manage it well, and then it won't be an issue for you to manage as you grow up and can drink whatever you want, you know? So we've definitely found that with sodas and like the different food stuff, because we try to feed our kids pretty healthy, but at the same time, we know that, like, you know, if you don't ever give them ice cream, they're going to always want ice cream. And then when they can buy their own ice cream, they're just going to eat ice cream all the time. And especially with a couple of my kids, knowing how habitual they are about certain things, like there will be a lot of ice cream and a lot of sodas and a lot of video games. It's another one where it's like you can withhold all the video games, or you can teach them to manage how much they play video games. We're going to get to the same thing with social media. I mean, the phones are another example of that whole thing. It's like, you can withhold for a point, but then they've got to learn to manage. And so I think, you know, from dealing with a lot of that stuff with my own kids, I'm realizing how there were several things growing up that were, I never was forced to learn to manage them myself. And I swung back, and then it took me into my 30s to learn how to begin to manage some of that stuff on my own. But anyway, the whole thing came from finances, and I'm reading a couple of financial books now because I'm realizing there was a lot I never learned. There was a lot of stuff, like just logistics stuff around managing your money, that I naturally kind of figured out, but I'm really, there's a whole bunch of holes in my knowledge there. So I'm like, oh, I could, you know, I should just learn this so that I can teach it to my kids. so that they don't grow up with the same holes in their knowledge that I had around financial stuff. If I can help them now, it will help them later. So that's why I'm reading that. I don't know how we got to that.
It's what happens when we don't have a solid topic.
Yeah.
We did the weave. Yeah.
The
weave. We can only talk about how hot it is for so long.
But that's how it started.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Cool. Well, you got any other thoughts on any of this? The weather or finances or soda or anything?
Turn the AC up to 11. That's what I say. Live your best life while you can.
Well, I think it's a combination. So I would agree with you. And I'm learning. Go outside and work really hard. Get super hot and sweaty. Earn it. And then go inside to your 11, you know, AC and enjoy the AC.
Mm-hmm. Treat yourself.
Yeah. It's a combination. If you only treat yourself, then eh. But if you never treat yourself, it's eh. You
know. So. There you go.
Cool. All right. Well, I want to thank our Patreon supporters. And I'm really hoping David has at least two picks today because I don't have one. Big thanks to everybody that helps us out at patreon.com/makingit. We're really grateful for you all. We had a lot of people reach out this last week about like the show not showing up on Google Music something or other. It's the show, last week's episode's not showing up somewhere, and it's totally out of our control, but thank you for asking. They thought we just like had stopped doing the podcast because it had been a couple weeks, and then it didn't show up and all that. I'm not sure what's up with, you know, RSS feeds. Sometimes they just don't work, and it really doesn't have a lot to do with us, I don't think. So anyway, thanks to everybody over there that reached out to check on us. We are grateful for you. Especially thanks to our top supporters. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leathergood, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, The New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Crabtree Creative, Matthias Garnow, and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc. But also people like Jerry Brown, who actually just joined up June 1st.
Welcome.
So thanks for being on. There's a few people that have joined up this month. Let's see. Tell you what, I'll just say Jerry Brown, Chris at Chris Will Make, JC1166, Eric, Stephen Lomnis, Damon McIntosh, and Mark Rockwell all joined up this month. So glad to have you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
All of those people and everybody else gets the after show.
Thank you.
Everybody at Patreon gets it. So go over there and join up. We'd love to have you. I have an update. So actually I have two updates. One's for the after show. It's about the Land Cruiser. Womp womp. The other one is I wanted to say thank you to several people. The first one that got this idea in for correcting my dowel problem, Wesley Treat, sent me this idea. So thank you, Wesley. This was awesome. And then it's funny because he sent this, and then within 24 hours, like three other people, including my dad, sent me a very similar version of the same idea. So the whole idea, the whole problem, if anybody doesn't remember, we drilled 1,000 holes with a CNC, and then we have these dowels that are supposed to fit in the hole. We measured a dowel. It was this one anomaly that was thinner than every other dowel in the world. So all the dowels I got didn't fit in the holes. So we're trying to figure out how to make 98 dowels fit in 8,000 holes. And basically, Wesley's idea was to take the end of it and cut across with a bandsaw into the end of it, chamfer the edge, and then you can just jam it in the hole.
Oh, my goodness.
Genius.
Oh, my goodness.
So simple, so fast. And I did one, and I can see exactly how it's going to work. I'm just waiting on the lady to let me come over to her place and try it and fit.
It's like a spring-loaded relief cut.
Yep.
Nice.
Oh.
So that's it. It's got to be it. I mean, I haven't tested it yet, but that's got to be it. So thank you, Wesley, and thank you, everybody else who sent similar versions of that idea.
I'll send you Chris. Chris McCormick sent me what he did, but he's
got a big industrial. As well. Yeah.
Did he send you the crushy vice?
Yeah. Yeah, which is a thing I don't want to make, but it was a cool idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one, for anybody that, I mean, nobody knows what we're talking about. It's a vise with a little,
kind of
like
these
overlay pieces. Like a die that goes on the vise
jaws,
and it has the right size hole cut in it. And so you put the dowel in it, and then you tighten the vise, and it crushes the dowel down to the right size, basically.
But the vise is actuated, so it happens quickly.
Yeah. Anyway, you guys got anything to recommend this week?
I'm looking at my feed. Lagasol does a live video. If anybody wants to see how sawmills work, Lagasol does a live feed every, I think, once a week, where you can go and watch a live feed of them using one of their pieces of equipment. And it's a live chat back and forth. They do it in English, and they do it also in Swedish. And go check it out. Lagasol.
How do you spell that?
Lagasol. I'll send you the feed.
Because you don't know how to spell it either.
I have no idea. Are you crazy? You crazy? I'll send it to you.
All right.
But I'm also watching Landman. So if anybody's watching Landman, it's actually pretty cool.
I don't know what that is.
I think it's on Paramount. I don't know.
Sounds Rachel, like a terrible superhero.
Rachel went through a bunch of.
The only I'm Landman.
Oh, you know what? So for Lagasol, I'm going to send you Project of the Day. That's my buddy. I'll send you him. He does all videos with Lagasol stuff. So. Project of the Day. I'll send you that. Landman is Billy Bob Thornton is an oil field manager.
It's oh, all yeah.
Types of drama. You know, every episode someone loses a hand or gets crushed to death in every episode. But it's interesting from the oil business point of view. Every dialogue is basically an editorial on the oil business, like versus the electric business, the electric power.
I have heard it is partly funded by big oil.
I do not doubt for one second. Because yes. every I said it last night to Rachel. I go, every dialogue is like an editorial on the business. That's either good for this or it's always kind of pooing on electrical. It's crazy. That makes perfect sense.
Interesting.
Yeah. But it is interesting because you learn what those things do. So I'll send you a couple of links.
So my pick is a CBS Sunday Morning clip. It is, where'd it go? Where did it go? Titled, loading, Jason Jones Altered Thrift Store Art. So this is not the first person to do this. There's other people that have made a great career out of taking thrift store paintings and painting on them. But this is a nice little segment from CBS Sunday Morning, and it's just kind of fun to watch. So there's my pick. This other one, you don't have to put in the link. But I recently, we were talking about sugar cereals, and we were privileged enough to have sugar cereals as kids. Sometimes it was the cheap off-brand, sometimes it was the good stuff. My favorite good stuff was always Fruity Pebbles. That has been my favorite cereal since a little kid. And imitation Fruity Pebbles has always tasted like crap. That is just what I've thought ever since a little kid. So in my privileged life now, a few weeks ago, we had a grocery delivered, like an Instacart Kroger delivery. So I picked what I wanted. They drop it off at your door. That's a convenience I just absolutely love and happy that I could afford this. I accidentally got my order plus somebody else's order one time. And then there was this bag of cereal and it was an imitation Fruity Pebbles with marshmallows. And I was like, I'm going to try it. This is going to be terrible. It was absolutely amazing. It's called Dino Bites with marshmallows.
Oh, I remember this.
It is so good. It is. So we ate we don't eat sugar cereals here in the house, but we had this. We ate it. We loved it.
We do now.
And then for my birthday, Kelly got me another bag of Dino Bites with marshmallows. It is so good.
That's awesome.
There you go.
Treat yourself. That's funny. Cool. Well, I don't have a pick. But we'll go with Dino Bites.
Okay.
They were advertised. They were showing up on podcasts and stuff for a minute.
Oh,
really?
Dino Bites, yeah. Yeah.
I'd never heard of it until it just showed up at my door.
Crazy. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And we will catch you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Turn up to 11. Love you.